There once was a man, and that man owned a barn. He was a round little elderly man with a shock of thinning strawberry hair and a pair of squinty eyes nestled in a pudgy smiling face. A farmer he was, who, when he dressed up, wore an orange print necktie with his bib overalls. And his barn stood behind his farmhouse, located among the gently rolling fields of western Wisconsin. And it had been his barn for years and years and years, inherited from his father. Now the paint on its walls had flaked off and disappeared decades before, leaving only bare, weathered wood. And its roof swayed in the center like the back of an old plow horse. It was a sagging, ramshackle structure, but it contained all the treasures that he had collected over the course of his life. Because this man was a hoarder, long before reality TV had ever heard of such a thing or turned it into a TV show. And this man was known to me as Uncle Bill. He was married to my mom's aunt, Elsie, and he was easily my favorite of that generation of the Jackson family. Uncle Bill's talent for holding on to useless junk and then stuffing it into his barn was unmatched by anyone and legendary among the family. Back in those days, the extended Jackson clan would hold a reunion once a year, every summer, and four generations would gather at Bill and Elsie's farm for food and baseball and a hike down to the lake and an afternoon of my mom's uncles singing hymns on the lawn in four-part harmony. My cousins and I were the kids at the reunion, and the adults made it very clear to us that under no circumstances were we ever to try to go in the barn ourselves, because it was dangerous and it was out of bounds, and we were to stay clear of it. So, of course, having heard the rumors of this barn full of stuff, our imaginations ran wild. And then we would conjure up all sorts of theories about what treasures that old barn might contain. Maybe there was a fancy race car in there, we thought. No, look at Uncle Bill. Does he look like the kind of guy who would drive a race car? Man, he couldn't even fit behind the steering wheel. Yeah. Somebody else, maybe he's got gold in there. Somebody else, maybe he's secretly a serial killer, and that's where he stashed all the bodies. And on it went, summer after summer after summer, the yearly yearning to see inside for ourselves, until one July Saturday, when good fortune finally smiled upon us. For some reason, all of the uncles decided to go visit the barn. And if that wasn't amazing enough, they said that we could tag along. So in a flash, we were up and standing there and watching as the rickety door let out an ancient groan as they slid it open. And there it was, the barn, stacked so full there was barely room to move in there. But it wasn't quite the treasure storehouse we expected. The cache of stuff Uncle Bill had socked away included an old foot pedal organ, its bellows likely having been eaten through by mice long ago. Old farm machinery that hadn't been worked in years. Stack after stack of newspapers, yellow and brittle with age. Boxes of rusted tools. Obviously used furniture under layers of dust. Worn out tires. Random parts of equipment that had long ago been forgotten. Ancient odds and ends no longer possible to even identify. If you could think of it, Uncle Bill had stashed it away in that barn. Though to our disappointment, no race car in sight. No gold to be found. Not even a single body. And Bill was saving it all for, who knew? Even he didn't know anymore. And in his shy Uncle Bill way, with his hands stuffed in his pockets, he just sort of shrugged his shoulders when my other uncles would ask what an item was or why he had saved it. Now, one time, No doubt before Bill had acquired it, because he was cheap, everything in there had been new. At one time, it had all been shiny. It had all been worth something, but no longer. Every last thing in the barn, every last bit of Uncle Bill's treasure had gone the way of all things on this earth, of all things we work so hard to possess in our lives and dream of owning and pretend will be the thing that will make life just right. It had corroded, lost its value, and then turned into mostly forgotten, worthless junk. And when Bill died some years later, a couple things were sold. A few things got passed along to other hands. My brother got the organ. But nearly all of it was thrown away, scattered to the wind, and Bill took absolutely none of it with him. And if you drive by that farm today, it is owned by an entirely different family. And while the house still stands, the barn was knocked down years ago, and a child's swing set stand in its place. And it makes me wonder if Jesus maybe was thinking of Uncle Bill when he told his story this morning, because it sounds a lot like him, a man who has more stuff than he rightfully knows what to do with, a guy whose barn is so crammed to overflowing that he decides that the obvious solution to his challenge is build bigger barns to hold more stuff. A guy who feels pretty secure because of all that stuff and his ability to acquire more, but who in the end loses it all, not because he hasn't done enough to attain his heart's desire, but because ultimately his heart desired the wrong thing. The thing that by its very nature could not last. Come to think of it, maybe Jesus wasn't just thinking about Uncle Bill. Maybe he had you and me on his mind when he told this story. Because it sounds a lot like us too, doesn't it? I was looking at some research not too long ago. It said the phrase, "how to budget," receives over 72,000 unique searches on YouTube every single month. According to the research I was looking at, the most important financial goal of American Christians is to provide for my family. The second most for American Christians is to support the lifestyle I want. Interestingly enough, you have to go quite a bit further down the list until you reach to serve God with my money. According to the research, only 25% of my generation feel confident that we have enough money to last through retirement. And on the other hand, student debt has put millennials into a hole they feel they can never crawl out of, so that the traditional milestones of life like home ownership don't even feel like an option for them. And what it all means, it seems to me, is that whether we have the means or whether we resent the fact that we will never have the means, the result is still the same. We are way into barn building. The biggest part of life becomes very much about our possessions. How to get them, or why we don't have them, or how to pay for them, or how to keep them safe, or how to get more. Barn building is what we do to store up whatever it is that we treasure and trust the most. It may be money. For most of us, that's probably what it is, money. Or it may be achievements that you value. It may be memories. It could be experiences or health or relationships. It might be security or control or successful children or time. And none of that is inherently bad. See, none of that is intrinsically wrong. Jesus himself owned a valuable garment that when he was crucified, the soldiers cast lots for it rather than tear it in pieces because it was too unique for such a fate as that. But here's the problem. If you have plenty of whatever trusted treasure you collect, if your barn is nearing capacity, you begin to think that filling the barn is the whole point of life. You can delude yourself into thinking that you are achieving the life you deserve, that it all belongs to you because you earned it, and then you stored it, and then it will somehow, it's going to keep you secure. And rather than simply valuing the things that we've acquired and the money that has bought them, we begin to trust it, imagining all the ways it will save us from what we fear and dread the most. And it begins to distract us, absorbing the best portions of our time and energy and imagination, sucking us into a frantic cycle that goes something like this. See if you recognize this at all. I've earned more, so I'm going to spend more. But now that I'm spending more, I need to earn more. And all the time you feel strapped and not that well off, which leads you to work even more. Money has this power to make you far too busy with things that are far less important. And then barn building becomes a primary approach to life, in which it isn't concerned about what it stores. It only cares about keeping score. It doesn't ask questions of meaning and purpose. It only asks questions of how much. And when that happens, we become like the rich man in Jesus' story. Now, understand, the man in Jesus' story, he's not a bad guy. He's not a bad guy. Jesus doesn't say he's done anything terrible. Jesus doesn't point out any sinful behavior in that opening sentence. He just says that the ground of a certain rich man produced a good crop. Jesus does not say that the man's productivity was somehow a bad thing. He does not condemn him for having a lot of grain. He does not suggest that there is something unacceptable about being rich. He does not call the rich man a fool simply because he's wealthy. No. But if you want to understand the problem here, you have to have a little closer look at the guy. Okay. First of all, as you heard mentioned in the introduction to the reading, this guy has no name. Did you notice that? Maybe it's because that's all he was. Just a rich man. If you make your income, if you make what you own, if you make your stuff your identity, and something takes the money away, then there's no you left. Because by self-definition, you are prosperous and successful, or you are nothing. Now take a closer look at this guy's language, okay? Jesus says the man thought to himself, "What shall I do? I have no place to store my crops." Then he said, "This is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I'll say to myself, 'You have plenty of good things laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, be merry.'" In the course of three sentences, this man uses the word I or mine 8 times. What does that suggest to you? As far as the man is concerned, there's no one else in this story. Not God, not his neighbors, not those in need, just him. Just him. The man's world is so small that he talks only to himself. "What should I do?" he asks. And he answers himself too. "These are my crops, my barns, my grain, my goods." Now, if you ask the man if he believed in God, I'm thinking he'd probably say yes. But in practice, while he claims to believe, he lives as if there is no God at all. And he's on his own to take care of himself. If you say you believe, but then order your life as if you don't, which is true. The only words coming out of this guy's mouth are, I, me, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Ah, ha, ha, but there's the issue, huh? There would not be many years. There wouldn't even be one more morning. "You fool," interrupts God. "This very night, your life is being demanded of you. And the things you've prepared, whose will they be?" How foolish that word "my" is going to sound by morning, huh? When he's gone. "You fool. Because you spent your life being a barn builder when you could have done so many other things to serve people, to influence the world, to show love and compassion, to live for God. And now, none of it lasts." See, that's the fundamental thing we forget in our frantic pursuit of whatever it is we define as the life we want, whatever it is with which we fill our barns. That, like Uncle Bill's barn of my childhood, none of it lasts. It rusts. It breaks. What was so important at one moment, so very important, now lies forgotten in the corner of the barn, buried underneath damp cardboard. And in the end, we die, and the barn is replaced with a swing set. The longer you hold on to things, the more you see them getting nibbled away, huh? Health, accomplishments, bank accounts, slips away from you until eventually it's all gone. It doesn't matter what you collect along the way in life and stuff into your barn, you don't get to keep any of it. I mean, poor guy, right? You gotta feel bad for this guy. Poor guy, he spent his entire life building barns, filling barns, building bigger ones, and then filling them too. His barns needed his constant attention just to maintain and manage them. That's what a life of barn building can do to you. It can make you forgetful as it absorbs your time and your energy and your imagination so you have too little left to pay attention to more important things. It can make you believe that the only bottom line in life is what you manage to shove into your barn. But it turns out that the only way to avoid being a fool is to recognize how living life with money in your pocket and financial resources at your fingertips actually requires greater faith and dependence on God, not less. Because Jesus presents a different bottom line. The only way to break the fever dream of bigger and better barns is radical generosity that emulates the generosity of God toward us. Let me say it again. This is the takeaway, folks. The only way to break the fever of bigger and better barns is radical generosity. Because God gives you this day, this one. And none of us know if we're going to get another. So this is the day to invest our lives in things that make an eternal difference. And how do you do that? By taking what's in your hand and placing it in God's hands. By giving Him the key to your barn. By determining how you will spend your life, where and on what you will invest your heart, rather than allowing your barn to decide that for you. Because the very last place your heart needs to be is crammed in a barn with a lot of useless stuff. The very last place your heart needs to be is panicked about how much more stuff you still need. The very last place your heart needs to be is teaching your children how to build bigger, better barns. Now, I've never been sure what it was in Uncle Bill that he was trying to fill when he kept piling more ultimately useless stuff into his broken down barn. Maybe it was a leftover reaction to the surviving the Great Depression. I don't know, because I never got a chance to ask him. He died, and his barn was long gone before I was old enough to fully understand or be able to talk with him about it. But Uncle Bill and his barn and this story of Jesus raises an important question. What is it I want? What is it you want? What are we looking for? The world, eternal life, to be reborn, to never lose hope again. Our tendency is to be able to recognize that something is missing in life, and then we chase after what we think might be the solution, what we think we want, and then we add it to the collection that we keep in the barn. And that so often results in this kind of frantic dashing about from one thing to the next, none of which turns out to be exactly what we're looking for, because what we want is a Savior. And there's only one of those. What we want is hope. And there's only one source of living hope. What we're looking for is life, and there's only one person who has the ability to give it to us. And what we want is meaning and purpose, but most of what we find only gives us the life equivalent of a temporary sugar high. And so sometimes what you have to do is stop chasing the things that are not Jesus so that you can be there when Jesus shows up and not off looking for something else. And you know what? Maybe we can't even fully know Jesus until we allow him to sweep away all the other things we've been so busy packing into our barns. But he knows us. See, that's the good news. And given half a chance, he will expand his presence in us and fill up the whole barn with himself. And then we will no longer need it to hold anything else but him.